I've been looking forward to doing this. It was a segment that was it was brought to my attention, strongly suggested by a good friend of ours, brokered by, if you will, our good buddy Steve Callis, who is one of the FDH Lounge dignitaries on the program here. He does a fair amount of broadcasting with this gentleman on WFAN. You can hear Steve Callis many Sunday mornings appearing with him on the show that this gentleman has on FAN. He is an expert on youth sports, on baseball, on many different kinds of things. According to Steve Callis, this gentleman was very instrumental in getting the pitch counts installed in the Little League World Series and the mandated rest that is coming between starts. He has a lengthy history with sports, particularly baseball. He had played in the Detroit Tigers organization after getting drafted out of Harvard. He had been a roving sports psychology instructor for my Cleveland Indians back in the day in the early 90s. So based on this guy's capabilities, he probably had something to do with shaping that golden era of the team, some of the minds as they were passing through. But it's a real pleasure to have this guy on. As you can tell by what I've been reading here, his reputation precedes him. I speak, of course, of Rick Wolf. Rick, it's a pleasure to have you on the FDH Lounge, sir. How are you this evening?
I am well, Rick. How are you doing?
Oh,
thank
fine.
You for that very nice introduction.
Thank you. Thank you. We try to put over everybody very strongly on the show here, and it's great to have you on, and I've enjoyed the times that I've listened to you and Steve on FAN there. Mm-hmm. Those are the times that was when it first got called to my attention. Steve would send me an email and say, hey, I'm going to go on with Rick this Sunday, and it's always been a pleasure in that regard here. Let's talk, before we get to some of the hot-button things here, what's been in the news with the cyberbullying and everything like that. Steve mm-hmm. said that he thought you would probably be too modest to claim credit for this, but you've definitely had applied some pressure on some of the powers that be, some lobbying, if you will, towards a movement of preservation of some of these young arms in the Little League World Series and trying to increase the regulations and trying to make sure that these youngsters are going to have more of a future and not get overworked en route to a victory in a given summer.
Well, you know, it's funny. My son is now in his mid-20s, so clearly he played Little League baseball, you know, many years ago. So I have no real axe to grind when it comes to Little League Baseball. Obviously, it's a wonderful institution and has been for many years. But I will say this, that in the course of my show, and I've been doing sports parenting for, golly, over more than two decades now, I guess. In fact, going back to the days when I worked with the Indians as their sports psychologist. But I just had real issues with the whole idea of watching these kids under the age of 12 or 13, and throwing, for example, a lot of curveballs. Now, if you watch ESPN, as I do every August when the Little League comes on, they don't call them curveballs or sliders, they call them breaking balls, although somehow that's going to make it safer. But, you know, there are 50 years of medical researchers who have said flat out that having kids under the age of 14 throw curveballs is going to be detrimental to their arms. I had Steve Keener, the CEO of Little League Baseball, come on my show a couple of years ago, and I said, Steve, how can you allow these kids to throw so many curveballs? And he said, Rick, I just don't know how to stop them. I said, that's very simply done, Steve. You just tell the umpire behind home plate, if he sees a kid throw a breaking ball, just call timeout, give the kid a warning. If he does it again, the kid has to be removed from the mound, and he can go play somewhere else on the field. But Keener clearly, for whatever reason, didn't want to do this because it's easily corrected, and yet to this day, you see the kids in Williamsport all throwing curveballs and sliders. It's not good for their arms. Then the pitch count stuff, up until this year, in the rules of Little League Baseball, and again, this is where Steve Callis has been so brilliant to his research, you know, they always said, well, you're not allowed to throw, you need 3 days of rest in Little League Baseball during the regular season. When you got to Williamsport, the rules changed. You can pitch on 2 days rest. So there were kids up until this year, when they finally picked up on all the flack, there were kids the last few years who were throwing 250 pitches in the course of 7 or 8, 9 days. It was getting nuts. And, of course, the final thing, and please, I don't want to take up your entire hour, but, you know, the aluminum bats. Little League absolutely insists that aluminum bats are just as safe as wood bats, and I think they're just That's doing a major, major disservice to the kids and parents everywhere. Anyhow, don't get me started.
No, that's. I'll tell you what, I'm glad you brought up about the aluminum bats. The Times, and Steve's a regular on our program. We talk about that all the time. I know that's like his pet cause. And, you know, he really does tremendous work drawing attention to that. And such that, you know, it's one of these things where I'm now making inquiries on that. You know, I've got a nephew who's just now getting old enough to start playing, you know, the most rudimentary of it. And I was asking my brother, like, hey, the kid's not playing in a league with aluminum bats, is he? Well, yeah, but, you know, I'm like, oh, geez, that's not a good idea. You know, so I wouldn't even be thinking about that kind of stuff if it wasn't for you guys.
Well, it's the fact is, and of course, there's a whole consortium, because this is big bucks. We're talking millions and millions of dollars with the aluminum bat industry. They very quietly try to bury all the lawsuits that come forth about kids who are seriously injured with line drives off aluminum bats. And they try to tell you, oh, no, the odds are slim. There's no scientific research that shows. Well, I guess the latest spin they had was this, and it's amazing how creative they are. They say, well, it appears that a ball off an aluminum bat, off the sweet spot, may travel perhaps, oh, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 miles per hour faster than off a wood bat. And it's such an infinitesimal difference, it makes no difference to a pitcher. And, you know, that's absolutely baloney, because a split second is all the difference in the world in terms of getting your head out of the way, getting your glove up in front of your face, jerking your neck out of the way. I mean, don't tell me that that's insignificant, because indeed it's very, very significant. And yet, you know, ever since Brandon Patch was killed a few years ago in Montana in a Babe Ruth game, other cases have come forth. And you know what? The aluminum bat manufacturers always lose, because anybody who spent any time on a baseball diamond throwing batting practice to a kid with a wood bat or aluminum bat, you know, it goes without saying there's a huge difference. But again, That's perhaps the grist for a different show.
Absolutely, and I look forward to having you back, hopefully, and being able to explore some of these things in a little more detail. We're going to have you on here tonight from your perspective as somebody who's dealt, you know, with youth sports, and you know, youth sports are one potential window into this culture. Certainly, everything that we've been hearing in the news recently, it's been a very hot button topic with you know, cyberbullying and the different type things. I just like to get your overall thoughts on this. I can give you my perspective. I mean, as somebody who people wouldn't know it to look at me now, but you know, when I was growing up, I was kind of a scrawny kid, glasses, braces. I've always been kind of a bookworm, so I took quite a lot when I was growing up, and I just look at it now, and it's one of these things. I look at the media, you know, discovering a phenomenon such as this, and to me, you know, manifestations are new. It's the 21st century. There's different aspects to it. But to me, it seems like we're talking about a phenomenon that's as old as man itself, it seems like. And, you know, the media, I think, is confusing the medium with, you know, the phenomenon itself.
Well, here's the problem. When you were growing up, or when I was growing up, and we're talking specifically here about bullying, you know, it is unfortunately part of society. And the difference is, you know, 15, 20, 30 years ago, if you went to school and there was a class bully, invariably you were prepared for it. You might see the guy after school. You might see him in the lunchroom, whatever it might be. But it was sort of a temporary situation. These days, because of the Internet and how prevalent it is, bullies have now gone on to the Internet, and that becomes a 24/7, nonstop, you can never escape it kind of situation. And even worse, once things are posted on the net, on the web, it's there forever. And kids today just don't know how to cope with this, because it's just so devastating. And we're talking here about all different types of manifestations. You know, a lot of newspapers in this country today understandably try to go out and try to have blogs online so local sports fans can write anonymously about local high school or college kids about how good or how bad they are. And the problem is, if you're a high school junior or a high school sophomore and somebody is writing horrible things about you anonymously online, you don't know how to cope with that. I mean, it's just devastating. That's the first thing. If somebody videotapes you or gets a picture of you with their cell phone in a place you shouldn't be, perhaps at a party, where they're serving alcohol or doing drugs, and they take that shot and they post it online. Again, you have no way to defend yourself. That's devastating. And of course, the whole thing about just writing, terrible things, posting horrible things, rumors, gossip. I mean, kids today think that if it's posted online, it must be true. I'm telling you, it is brutal. It's just unbelievable stuff. And of course, the most recent incident with this wasn't an athlete, but it was a freshman at Rutgers, and the kid, his privacy was violated by his roommate, who streamed online some video of this kid, having an affair with a guy. And the kid said, "Well, my life is ruined," and he jumped off the George Washington Bridge. This stuff is just unbelievable, and I'm not really quite sure how we stop this.
Yeah, I don't know how you do either, because you outlined there all the different ways that technology, takes the phenomenon and makes it worse. And I regret that we're not going to be able to get into this in the kind of detail tonight that we can, hopefully, in some future shows. But, are there any... I'll just bring it around to this. Are there any rudimentary type, at least first steps that you can think of where teachers, parents, associations, whatever can, try to do this, whether it be, just the continuing thing of trying to bring more attention to it or anything more concrete? I mean, from your perch as somebody who's dealt with, so many youth issues and that whole culture, what do you think are first steps to get something done?
Well, I will tell you this. It's very parallel, if you will, to the whole individual concerns we have about kids and taking performance-enhancing drugs and steroids and everything else. It all starts with, you like to think it starts with the parents, but you can't always rely upon the parents to educate their kids. So in this case, I think the best way is to get the schools and put the responsibility on the teachers, perhaps in middle school, to actually teach a course or several classes about civility and the Internet. And I mean really get down to the nitty-gritty the same way that, perhaps sex education is taught in our schools or, as I said, things about steroid use. Get to the kids at an early age and say, let me explain to you how easy it is to become a victim of all this and how your life could really just unravel and you have no way to counteract this. And I think if the kids have some sensitivity to this, they might, you're not going to eradicate everybody, but you might at least get most of these kids thinking about the impact it has if they stream horrible video of their friends, if they post terrible things online. I mean, we got to start educating the kids about just how powerful this Internet can be.
Well, very well said, Rick. And, now that we've kind of whetted people's appetite here tonight by putting some of these things out there, love to have you back here sometime soon and draw upon these things in a little bit more detail. Of course, we've been speaking with author, editor, psychologist, and WFAN talk show host, and I'm probably missing three or four vocations there, Rick Wolf. Rick, it was a pleasure to have you on tonight in the window that we had for you. It would be our pleasure to have you back on sometime soon, sir.
I look forward to it. Thanks, Rick.
Thank you very much. It was our pleasure, Rick. Rick Wolf, everybody, from WFAN in New York.